to Mervyn Reel 9. So you've gone back to Strensel and you were in what you describe as the spiders.
The Holden.
And how long were you in the Holden company?
About a fortnight, I think.
So it was quite a short period.
Obviously, the troop ship, which we were going to go on, was obviously going to be full. They weren't going to just send out with a half a dozen of us, obviously. And so, around about that time, all the drafts who were going to go out to the Far East, they would hold them. We had about a fortnight to wait. Some mightn't have had any time to wait. Some might have waited a bit longer. And the time came when they said, right, you're away the next day. And then packed the gear, two kit bags, and all your gear.
Were you given any extra equipment?
No, I don't think so.
Any extra kit?
No, I think we've got it all there. We still had the old army clear coat and the big thing, and they did change the weapon. You know, before it was like the belts that had to be blank coat, like the khaki, but we had this like jungle green stuff, that for camouflage. And the lads in the area had the jungle green stuff in it. But apart from that, we got Western vests and that out there. Mm. No, we just went out with it. But there was two kit bags. And your spare boots and this, that, and that. And piled onto a wagon, or wagons. Went from Strensel down to York Station, and then above the York Station was just a massive troops, guards, or light infantry, various an RAF draft, and there was a special troop train on, and we all had designated compartments, and there was obviously somebody in charge of the draft, an officer or a somebody who was going out, maybe a Somerset officer who was going out to join the Somersets up there in the layer. He'd say, well, you're in charge of that draft of Durham, so or whatever. And he would get us from a couple of sergeants and that. And then all on the train, then the train went down, straight down to Southampton. And it pulled right up on the quayside. We all got out of the train and lined up in our companies, if you want, the BLI contingent. And
because you would still be in your SOM unit, were you, at that time?
We weren't SOM or SOM, but we were the same lads. You know, just different names, just maybe this won't be a BLI draft. Then we all lined up on the quayside, all kick bags, and same as stand there. Ages and ages. And then we want to service the ground in the cup of tea, and we looked up at the ship that was going to take us. The ship was boarded out of the column, it looked like an old tramp. It wasn't very impressive when we saw it. Oh my God, I'll never get there.
So what was going through your mind then at this time, now that you realise, well, here we are?
This is it. Are we leaving England for the last time?
Did that go through your mind?
Oh, I think the last time I went over to the Devon railway station, I went over there, had the last look at the cathedral, when we see you again, you never know. It's a funny feeling.
Were others feeling the same, do you know? Did you talk about that sort of thing then?
Well, maybe he's jokingly, but I have a last look at it, you might see it again. It was something you had to accept it might happen, But everything's new.
Did it feel like an adventure then?
What's coming next? What have they got in store for us now? Oh, we'll have an easy time on the boat. you know, you can't do much on a boat. You know, you can't get any far wrong. There's so much you can do on a boat. And it's there, you know, you're wondering what's around the corner. You know, I wonder what's around the corner. You know, I'm a woman who sees it. What's the feeling like? You know, how. And just.
You'd never been abroad before.
No.
And I guess probably most of the others hadn't either.
No, I've been to London, that was it, for the Festival of Britain. I've been down there for a week in Blackpool. That was what my idea.
So there was a certain amount of excitement?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you'd seen pictures of boats and troop ships, I suppose, down at Newcastle, you'd seen the boats going up, you'd never been on one. And then it comes your turn, and you go up the gangplank. And then it's in, you know, down there. And you go a little bit down at the bows of the ship. And I don't know, we were told that it was like another one. That it was an immigrant ship.
Can you remember the name?
The Asturias. HMT. What HMT stands for, I haven't got a clue. Her Majesty's Transport or Her Majesty's Trooper. Oh, it was His Majesty then, like. But, you know, I don't know, some have SS this, but they're all, it was Asturias. And I reckon that some said it was it did the Australian immigrant run. Because when we got down on the deck where we were going to sleep, the whole width of the ship, there was poles going from the top to the bottom. About 7 foot apart, and about 8 foot the other way. And at one time, if you can imagine, three frames which come out like you and they're clipped up onto these poles, and you drop it down, and it hangs on a chain as a canvas, and that's your bed. You just drop down, and there was three. On these things, you know, there's three on this side,
three levels,
on this side, three heights, you know. And they went right across the width of the ship and so far along, and that was, I mean, obviously it was more than that was on, you know. And that was where we lived.
So, how many would there be in that particular area, room?
Oh, there was a lot, there were hundreds, you know. And there was places around the side of the ship where you had to put the kit bags and store them. And they had to be stored so that they didn't fly out when the ship started rolling. And you had a little. I can't remember now. Well, I think we remember getting a uniform of. Like the KDs, which was the tropical gear. Because we've got tropical gear, because we're going to Far East.
When did you get issued with that then?
I must have got down at Stencil or something, the cart and shorts. And
so you did get.
We got some tropical gear. And I think you remember hanging it up between the two beds, because you had nowhere really.
You had no personal lockers or anything
personal
like that?
Lockers, you know, just a kit bag and that. And everybody did the same. Because you pulled it. Thing down, and there was a canvas frame, and it was warm, you know, it was warm down there. You didn't need many blankets or sheets. And you just had a pillow, and you just lay there, and three, one at the bottom, one in the middle, one on the top. And then during the day, you had to get up and hoop them up, which gave you the big space. And the floor had to be swept and cleaned, same as the back. And everything had to be stored away, nothing thrown, nothing that could fly around. And so the first time when you get on, you look at it, and you weren't designated a bunk, but everybody grabbed what the, you know, all over the top, you know, just like that. And you put your gear away where you could try and keep an eye on it, you know. And that was it, you settled down. You were given, you were either first, second called for breakfast, you know, for a meal. You know, like first breakfast, first lunch, first dinner, or second. You know, walk to a canteen.
So yeah, I was just going to say, how did the daily life? Before I do, can you remember when this was? What date?
It was November. Around about beginning of November.
52.
And I know that we got on the boat on the Wednesday. And everybody in the boat was up on the Wednesday. And that night we were all battened down. And there was regimental police. And military police. All over the families. So that nobody could get off and deserve. That was all they were there for. There was one at the top and the bottom of the gangways and the patrol at the bottom. So that nobody could get off and deserve. And they were there all the time. And they were there until the gangways were lifted off and the boat sailed away. And we sailed on the Thursday, lunchtime.
So your first night on the ship was in harbour?
I'm tied up. Yeah. But in that time, we sort of got on the Wednesday afternoon. And between Wednesday afternoon and the ship sailing, we were on our deck. We'd been given our meal times. We'd more or less known what your body was. We'd found out where you went to get your meals. We'd found out where the toilets were, where the shower, you know, you got yourself orientated to where different things were, or hopefully. And then on the Thursday afternoon, 5 o'clock, the boat cast off. And there was nobody there waving in the air. There was no bands playing. There was nobody waving. There was no, the ship just a couple of dockies, you know, unhooked the big rope and. Then the way the ship went down the sailing. But I can't remember much about going. You didn't get much time to stand on the side and look over. I can't remember much at all.
Well, just take us through a typical day then as you journey out. What time was Ravalli? Can you remember?
Oh, it was about 6 o'clock. You still had jobs to do.
So you describe having to put your bedding up and sweep the deck.
Well, the first sailing down the shore, along the Isle of Wight, and down the channel. And when we woke up the next morning, we were just getting into the bed biscuit. And the lads were getting off the beds, and then they're staggering outside the other, and then somebody's sick. And then I would say 3/4 they were sick. And they were just lying, spewing. No, obviously coming down. Couldn't get them sorted out.
So what was the reaction to that then? Was that a sickness as such?
Sick. They just couldn't do nothing with it.
And what did they have to do?
I just left them there. It was floating around with the bottom, you know. And what they said was, it was like after going through the bay. Then they said, right, okay, and they must obviously experience just the other day. And I was never seasick, but I didn't have any meat for about the first day. And what they said was, when it would smell the dog a bit, and the lad would get himself put it there. So anybody who would volunteer to go down and swim those nest eggs out. They won't have to do any jobs for the rest of the trip. So there were some lads, they went down and they mopped it all up and did it, and they were excused to do the rest of the 6 weeks. Which was, you know, it wasn't a bad one, mate, for, you know, 4 or 5 hours work. I know it was an awful job, but they did it anyway. But after that, you get up one morning and have your breakfast.
What was breakfast usually consist of?
Oh, it was canyon and nearly. Why, on the ship. You've got those trays with all the little indentations in, you know, where...
The individual portion.
Oh, you could put an egg in there. You know, and he went along, and the food was pretty good.
What was it, the ship's canteen?
It was a proper like cafeteria. Is that all of the other food ships were about the same? Well, so the being an immigrant ship, it might have been a little bit better organised. You know? And there was a, like a nappy where you could go and get a drink.
Alcohol, you could.
But you know what you mean about it, you know. Cigarettes, you could buy cigarettes. But that was where I first realised that you can only buy safety matches on a ship. You cannot buy, you know, the ordinary puck matches and the bright and near matches, like the red head. And then there was the dark brown head with a safety match, which would only strike on the thing. But that's why you could buy on a ship, obviously, in case of a fire. You know, if anybody dropped a match, it wouldn't, in the boot went rolling, it wouldn't flare. So there was only safety matches, so you know, I didn't realise. Yeah. And you would get, certain lads would be told, right, you report to the ship's quartermaster or wherever it was, and you had to go down into the hold and help them bring the food up to the gear. You know, the cooks would say, so many bags of potatoes, so many bags of onions, so many this, so many that. But somebody had to go down in the hold and bring it up for them, so there was some detail to do that. There was always people detailed to do fire watching, very strict on fire watching. There was people, I'm not saying that, but there was people stationed all over the ship down below looking out for fire. I mean, it's the worst thing at sea, the fire.
Was there any training in firefighting? Just to digress slightly, really. It was just a watch.
But we all had boat stations, we all practiced boat stations where you had to go to if the alarms went, you know, you knew where to go, this, that, and the other. And there was, obviously, there was from hose reels, and they were all, you were stationed and there was a phone, and you would just phone over, you know, it never happened, but I would imagine there'd be someone there straight away, you know. And so there was fire picket. And there was also a guard on, there was guards on to make sure nobody jumped off the ship or something like that. And then there was a ship's hospital, you know, anybody who was ill. And you had to, on the morning, first thing on the morning, the ship's crew hosed the decks down with the water, but they hosed it and bring it down. But after that, it was slides were detailed off to sweep the decks. You had to go and sweep the decks. And you had to go and sweep the decks where, I don't know how many decks it was, but the troops, they were just allowed the bottom deck. And there wasn't much space. Not everybody couldn't lie in somebody if there wasn't space in that ground. But on the next two or three decks above, you weren't allowed up there. Because that's where my families were, and the wives going out to join the husbands, and the officers' quarters, they weren't allowed up there, other than to do sweep up or just polish the brasses. And I think that's what nearly everybody had something to do.
Was there much contact then between yourselves and?
No, it was us. We were the ones that were down there, you know.
Meal times were separate as well, was it a separate
facilities? Somewhere else, yeah. Might be there with the troops, they were entirely different there. First class. Oh yeah, cut off. And that was it, and the day was always filled in. And somebody always tried to, we didn't do any shooting when we were going out.
Well, I was just going to ask you what training you did.
Because we weren't with the battalion. There was all odds and sods, there was engineers, there was signals, there was Dillons, there was Coyleys, there was everybody on the ship.
So you were all drafts in it?
All drafts, yeah. There was no name, you were done. We were all just draftees.
So there was no training as such?
We were all going out as replacements, you know. And when the battalion was going out and they stopped off somewhere, they went out on a route march. And we got short leave, 4 or 6 hours. So we didn't have any of that, you know. We just had the jobs of keeping the ship tidy.
General menial tasks.
General menial tasks. Mm. waiting on the Murray Pats, you know.
What did you do for entertainment?
Well, there's always somebody to play the piano or give a turn or just line somebody. Because as we went through a Strait of Gibraltar at night, and the old man's up on the deck to say you played up at night. And then you're battened down. And we were battened down. And we went through the Med. Well, as you walk through the Med, they were saying, right, you're allowed to sunbathe for half an hour a day. And they would say, okay, 1 o'clock, you can sunbathe, and half past one, put your shirt on. You could sunbathe after that, but if you've got sunburn, you're on the charge. If you've got sunburn, it was a self-inflicted wound, and you're on the charge. Because they looked at it, you couldn't lay a weapon if you were all blistered and couldn't lay a game.
Was there any fell foul of that?
Well, the four lads got blisters on the ship like the 6 weeks or two, you know. But everybody more or less abided by it. I mean, nobody must have got sunburned, you know. And so what I did, I think it was half an hour, and then over the period of the 5 or 6 weeks, depending on the speed of the board, and it was about 6 weeks, they increased it. You know, it was all done medically, you know, okay, in a half an hour, then an hour, and so until you could stand it. But our first port of call was Port Said. That was at the top end of the Suez Canal.
That was your first stop off point?
But we didn't. That was the first place where the ship pulled in to go to the Suez Canal, but we didn't get off, we weren't allowed off. There might have been the boat did tie up a bit because they were, apart from being a troop ship, they would be dropping mail off for the lads who were in the canal zone. Maybe dropping food off or taking water on, you know, there was things like that. And then they had to. The Suez Canal is only narrow. It's shaped like the keel of a ship. It isn't down and flat. It's shaped like the keel of a ship, so the ship's got to put down the middle. And they're only allowed to go at a certain speed. Because if it goes too fast, the waves wash over it and they'll knock the sides up. And so with only one ship, they can't pass in the canal. So what I have to do is that all the ships come in and they gather outside, Port Said at the top and Suez at the bottom. And they have a convoy, and so maybe 20 or 30 ships are brought down one after the other, down through the canal. But in the middle, there's two great big lakes called the Great and Lesser Bigger Lake. And that's where the ships pass. So you've got the convoy going, shall we say, south, and the convoy coming north. And when they get to the middle, one convoy is in front of the other, so they anchor in the lakes, and the other one comes down, sails through, and out, and then the other one goes up. And so consequently, I say, we waited at Port Said until it was late. And I don't know whether there's a pilot who goes on each ship, or whether you just sail for the leader. I mean, that's not how it is.
Must have been quite a thing to see, though.
Oh, it is, aye.
As you say, you'd never really been abroad. And,
to go down
and you're sailing through the desert here, in effect, aren't you?
Of course, you say, when you're going down, you've got the lads who are stationed in the canal zone. And they're all on the bank sides, you know, different places. And they're shouting at the ship, you know, get some time in, you know. On the ship, you want to get away from this home posting man, you know, you want to get abroad, and, you know, rivalry, you know, just shouting across at each other. And then, out through service, you know, actual first place we got off was Aden, the bottom end of the Red Sea. And we had about 6 hours shore there. But that was the first encounter with Arabs, with foreign people, if you want a better word. Of course, I've never met anybody in this country who weren't the immigrants, and here then is what he is now.
And that was your first?
That was the first
stop
on,
off.
On dry land from here in Southampton. And,
how long were you there for?
Well, we were there for about 6 hours. Oh. But once again, the port took on water there, because after that, the water was pretty awful. You know, they didn't want it. I mean, obviously, they chopped up at Southampton. And they got everybody washing in that, so they've got to take on water. And I think they took it on at Aden, where it was, you know, not distilled. You know, they do it now in Arabia when they make drinking water, they say water. Anyway.
But they probably just put tablets in it,
Whatever it was, you know, they were really awful. And that was our first journey. We went away from there and went to Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka, to Colombo. And the boat was too big to go in. So it anchored outside, and all of these like barges came and took us all in once again for shore leave.
How long were you there for them?
Well, once again, you're only ashore for about 4 or 6 hours. You know, the boat may be ashore too long. The boat might be there for the day, dependent on what it's carrying or what it's got to do, because they're dropping people off, not lots of them, but you know, some people are posted into Ceylon, some people, I mean, there's people in here, you know, few recruits going out there.
And then where from there?
Singapore, across the Indian Ocean. That was a kind of journey across there. And then, as I said, the boat tied up in Singapore. And once again, we allowed shore. All this time it takes money, and you don't have any money to go ashore. You know, okay, you go ashore, I'll let you see what places are like. But you haven't got the money to go washing around and buying.
Does it give you any foreign currency to spend in these places?
We must have got some foreign currency. Although then anybody would take henchmen. I mean, we just won the war, so if anybody wanted to get on, they'd have to take Englishmen or speak English, because we weren't built up around their languages. You know, we were continental sort of, and everybody spoke broken English. And I think we just did. Now, I know when I got to Hong Kong, we got Hong Kong dollars. We got paid in. No, it was Hong Kong. But anyway, Singapore, and we went and had a look in there. Raffles Quay, was it? A big hotel. In the colonial days, it's, you know, I had a look around that sort of thing, had a ride in the rickshaw, and just the area. Which is pittance. We were always advised never to buy fruit unless you peel the skin to eat it. You know, don't, like, an orange is alright, an apple, you had to peel it before you ate it, and bananas are alright, because you don't know what they use for manure on these fruits and that, or what they're washing with.
What were your impressions of these places as you stopped along?
Well, awesome, you know, we've never been before, you know. The Aden was arid, you know, a bit like one of these things you see on the cowboys, you know. It's a tumbleweed coming down, you know, and a lot of poverty and a lot of very, you know, fruitage. Oh, great. But at the back, you know, just rattling, you know. And of course, every so often you would find a sign out of bounds for British troops. You know, no entry. And you weren't, if you were caught down there, you were in trouble. You know, if the military police caught you down there, you were in trouble. And that was down where the brothels were, where you shouldn't be. And all the way along was out of bounds for British troops and all the rest. And there were all people trying to flog you.
Who put those signs up?
Oh, the British military police.
I was going to say, I guess the locals would want you to go down there.
Aye, well, it was the army. It wasn't just for the army, it was for the Navy and the Air Force lads who were there as well, you know. Was it in Colombo they were trying to flood us? It's moonstones. I think that's a rare stone out there. I call it moonstone. And diamonds and that. You know, they got a ring. And they were going to have a good ring on with a diamond in there, with a glass and scratch it, you know. And you would buy it when you got back on the ship, it was a bit of glass. They were good at seeing you off.
So where to from Singapore?
Hong Kong.
That was Hong Kong, and and you stayed there?
I got off in Hong Kong.
And how long were you in Hong Kong for?
One month.